This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by BlackStarLabs.com, home of Ultra Peptide 2.0, the best tasting protein out there. Make sure to mention the FitCast when you place your order. Welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 141. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and with me, as I mentioned in the off-topic discussion from an air tunnel, is Dr. Jonathan Fass of acceleratedstrength.com.
The windows are up in the car, and yet this is how noisy it is.
I think you just need a new cell phone, John, because this has been happening for a while, but that's okay.
This is a new phone, and it's a good phone, too.
John, how would you like to hear about some FitCast-related topics?
I would love to listen to FitCast-related topics.
All right. Well, first, let's talk about some blogging that has been going on the website with the first blog called Cheat With This, where I talked about Orville Redenbacher's fantastic kettle corn, 300-calorie bags of awesomeness. And that says that on the box. But did you like popcorn, John?
Sure, Kat.
You know, sometimes when people need to satisfy the salty and sweet, kettle corn is a great alternative. And they have these little mini 100-calorie bags, so it's easy to kind of figure out where your calories are at for the day. And they also, like, a big-ass bag of popcorn is, like, just 300 calories. So I have one of those today. That was my cheat meal for the week. I had one 300-calorie bag of popcorn. I splurged.
Wow, yeah, go easy, pal. You don't want to ruin all your gains.
You know what? I hope I don't, because I just sent topless pictures of myself to Lee Peel. So hopefully she is delighted. And that brings me to the next point. I updated the Destination Apps project because people have been on my butt about it. And, you know, I post an update. A lot of the things that I've learned so far through the Destination Apps project, of course, it's been a great learning experience for myself. You can read more about that at the website. And last but not least, John, let's talk about yoga, because I had a post on Friday about yoga that I would be participating in a class of yoga. Class
A, what do you think, Kevin?
Class a day yoga. You know what, John? I feel pretty good. For an hour, you know, on my off days from lifting, I do an hour of, you know, recovery work, you know, foam rolling, mobility stuff, some walking outside or on the treadmill. And you know what? I think on my Sundays, this is going to be a great alternative. There's some things, like John and I were talking about it early in the show, and I'm going to talk with Nick Tumanello about, but and a lot of the movements is lots of lumbar spine flexion and rotation, which kind of bothered me a little bit, like physically. Like I was like, my body shouldn't be doing this, and my back was kind of telling me that, but you know, it was a good experience, and I'm probably going to go back next week. And you know what? I think it's like having you know, chocolate and vanilla. You know, you can't just have chocolate all the time, John. You got to have some vanilla too.
I'll make sure that I do that, Kevin.
So tonight, when you are, just have chocolate or vanilla ice cream with chocolate sprinkles.
You can do that. Awesome.
So I'm gonna write about that more about that later this week. So probably on Wednesday or Thursday. But the a couple more things we got to quickly talk about. I would ask Lee about her Ask Lee podcast, but Lee's not here. So just go to leepill.com for that. We have a John. Let's talk about charity for a second.
Okay.
Because remember last week I kind of asked people, I wanted 20 people to donate $25 or to buy Lift Strong for this contest that we're putting on. And guess how many entries I got?
I don't know, Kevin. How many?
I got 11.
All right.
It's just pretty good. You know, it's not bad.
Yeah.
But I think we can do better, John.
I think we can too.
Because I'm talking, like, you guys, this is $25. This is 5 cups of crappy Starbucks coffee. This is, you know, a trip to the movies. Maybe you went to go see Transformers with your girlfriend and you had to pay for her ticket, and you could you could have just given that money to charity, because it would be much better than giving it to
Transformers 2.
Transformers 2. And
yeah,
you know, this is the deal. Like, it's when we think about it, it's really not that much money, and we're trying to do something really good here, and I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is. And here's what I'm going to do. We're going to, for one more week, for next week's entry, we still are going to give away another book and another t-shirt, from July 12th, which is right now, till July 18th, which would be on Saturday. We're going to do this one more time. And again, everyone who's already entered, your names go back in the hat already, so you're good. If you entered before, you're just going to stay in that pile. What we're going to do is, I want 15 new donations to anything. If you want to give it to, John mentioned a charity for a friend of a friend.
Not my friend.
Okay. Oh, sorry. And I think we have one or two people donate to that, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Very cool. Thank you.
And you know, I just want you, $25 to any charity, like American Red Cross, like I mentioned last week, Michael J. Fox Foundation, or Leukemia Lymphoma, you know, the Jimmy Fund, anything you want to donate money to. If you have a friend in the office and they're doing a walk, donate $25 to that. Just tell me about it. Hopefully you can give me some kind of proof. Or we'll go on the honor system. If you're going to lie to me about donating $25, you have big problems. You don't need a book and a t-shirt. But
yeah.
This is what I'm going to do. If we have 15 in the next week, I will donate $50 to the Michael J. Fox Foundation of, you know, my gross income that I met. Immense amount of money that I make as a personal trainer, I will put towards a charity. And that's sarcasm if you don't, you know, you didn't hear it in my voice. But you know what, again, like, if you're in a position where you can do something, well, I'm living with my parents, I don't have to pay for rent, I can I'm okay with donating $50. Like, that's cool. And I want to do this to entice you guys to do it. So 15 people, any charity you want, just forward the invoices to me at kevin@thefitcast.com, and you'll be good to go. And I really want to see if we can do something good with this. And you know, thank you for everyone who has done something so far. It's really cool of you to take the time and the money to sign up and to help out people that, you know, hopefully you have the ability to help. So, and our winner was Kyle Snay, Snay. So Kyle, you're getting a FitCast t-shirt and a copy of Dan Gion's, fantastic book, Never Let Go. Which is
awesome.
If you didn't know, it's the sequel to Titanic as well. That's the second half. So,
okay.
It's two books. Two books for the price of one. No, but to be honest, I think I'm about 2/3 of the way through the book. It's a nice, lengthy book, and it's fantastic stuff. You know, Dan John talks about a lot of his life experiences, things that he's learned, you know, with strength training, and just how to apply things in general, which may click with a lot of people out there, and I really think it will. His stuff is very good. All right. Now that we're done talking about that, let's talk about censoring, John. Isn't it fun?
All righty. Let's do it.
Let's talk about this every week on the show. But it's a new segment that we're putting on. But on the website, on the fitcast.com, we threw up a survey to see what people wanted us to do, if they wanted to have us. Number one, no, keep the podcast uncensored and quote real. That's what I put that in there. I thought that was nice. Or should we be, yes, you should edit out all the curse words and inappropriate language. So in the poll, we had 86% said no, do not, just keep it uncensored, and 14% said to censor it. But what we're going to do is, we're going to keep it, you know, as fun and as entertaining as it always has been. We're just going to, you know, try to watch our language. Like, it's you'll notice later in the show, there is one S word with Nick Tumminello. He says the S word when talking about something Juan Carlos Santana told him, that we don't know S. So if you'll be getting towards that point, you want to turn the volume down a little bit or tell the kids in your muffs, you can do that and prepare for a S storm. Get it?
The only F words will be fun.
Fun and fantasy.
Fitness.
Only fantasy when Tony comes on. Hey guys, you want to
play? And probably fail.
Fail. All right. What else? So anyways, yeah. Thanks for everyone who participated in that poll, and we had like 40. I think we had like 40 comments in the post. I take that back. We had almost 50 with people saying no and yes, and you should because of this and should because of that. I read all of them, and I think everyone has a valid point on both sides. But you know, I think this is going to be the best thing, and we're going to keep it PG-13, and that's their goal. You know, PG-13. There's still some. You know, there was a movie back in the day that was PG that had an F word in it, right?
Really?
Yeah.
What was that?
I can't remember, but there was. John, I don't know why I brought you on. I don't know why I brought you on here.
I don't know either. So let's go to some questions.
You want to do mailbag stuff?
I don't know.
All right, last but not least.
Dude, I'm driving to Delaware. I don't care what we do.
All right. Blackstar Labs. People, if you hear about Blackstar Labs through the FitCast and you order stuff through their site at blackstarlabs.com, please make sure to mention that you heard about us through the FitCast, so they know that the advertising is actually doing something. That, you know, those are the guys that make ICE, which is a fantastic branched chain amino acid product that I actually used this morning, and Ultra Peptide 2.0, which is still, I will put it against anything, it's the best tasting chocolate protein I've ever had in my life. And also Cytofuse, which is a great post-workout shake, which I also used some of last week. It's nice. They got some a little different, a little lemonade flavor, and they also have watermelon, which is pretty cool.
Cool.
So please make sure to do that. They got great stuff, blackstarlabs.com. All right. Well, John, I'm going to ask you one thing.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about yogurt. What are your feelings in general about yoga? And, you know, I obviously this isn't something that we're going to have our clients with low back issues doing. It wouldn't make much sense. But what's your general take on it?
General take has always been this. Something that's, God, what is it, like, you know, 3,000, 4,000 years old, where I've seen, you know, individuals in advanced age doing pretty amazing things physically, and they're basically yoga practitioners. I can't fault something like that. So you hear a lot about, you know, concern about too much mobility, too much flexibility. But I think yoga is more than just stretching. There is strength training, and it's the kind of strength training, postural strength training, which is just so important as far as overall health and well-being. So I don't have a problem with yoga at all. I think that yoga can be better for some individuals than others, but that can be said of anything.
Yes.
I think that concerns about mobility aren't always, you know, that probably lies more on the instructor, because the instructor should be there to ensure that proper form and proper motion is being taught and performed by people taking the classes. So to me, it's not really a fault of yoga when we talk about those things, but rather a fault of possibly how it's being taught, and just making sure that we're doing a better job of the things that we're actually teaching. When we talk about too much motion, like in the lumbar spine, well, maybe if we lock out our lumbar spine, can we make sure that we're not getting some of the unwanted motion there, then it's no longer a bad position or a bad movement. So we also have to look back on ourselves and say, you know, am I performing this properly? Am I doing this movement properly? And if not, can I make this better, rather than saying, well, I just can't do yoga then because obviously it's not for me. So in general, I'm pretty good with yoga, and I'd rather see people more flexible than less flexible, given the amount of poor flexibility that I see day-to-day from most of my clients or from my patients.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same boat. It's definitely, I would never tell someone who is going to be, you know, unless they have some kind of predisposition already, that I'm not going to tell them to, no, I'd rather have you not exercise than do yoga.
Right.
It's a good, like, I was sweating my ass off, you know. I wasn't doing any heavy breathing. I was breathing through my nose the whole time, but still, it's definitely, you know, a good form of physical exercise. Although I'd rather have,
right.
I think one of the things that I wrote about in the blog post is that, you know, one of the big issues with it is you see a lot of older women doing yoga, and you know, mm-hmm. that might not generally be the best thing for them right now, when they could be at risk for dealing with osteoporosis when they need to be doing load bearing exercise and they're just kind of like halting poses.
But you know what? That's not necessarily true either, because what we need is muscle activity. And don't forget the force impact of just muscle strength and muscle force on bones and joints. So for someone that may be osteoporotic, which probably implies a very low level of activity to begin with, unless they have, you know, a genetic predisposition, and most people will have that to some extent, but usually a lack of activity will encourage that, then yoga may be one of the most perfect things for them to do, at least in the beginning, to start improving activity and joint compression and muscle activity there. So it's not even necessarily that true. Like, eventually, do we want them in load-bearing activity? Yeah, we do. But one of the first things that you assign to someone that's osteoporotic is go and walk, because that's going to increase a lot of forces on the joints in a longitudinal direction as far as your joint compression, as far as your bone compression goes. And, you know, yoga will offer a lot of the same things.
That's a good point. I still think I'd rather have women lifting, you know, some weights as well if they have the opportunity to do that, because you just never know how intense that exercise is going to be for them, or how much they're really able to do in that yoga class. Maybe they're doing like the minimal of the minimal when it comes to the movements in that class, because they just don't have, you know, the stability to stand on one leg and like bend over into, I forget what the position's called, and make a triangle, a half triangle, whatever these things are. And, you know, I think it would be a lot easier
really,
to jump in with.
You really paid attention in class.
Well, I was, yeah. Anyways. Here's a question that we have. It's from Shari. Hey, Kevin, I asked Lee this, and she said I should ask you about it. Would you guys ever consider a FitCast seminar? I think it would be really cool if you could ever put one together. No, we're not doing a FitCast seminar. I don't have money.
You don't want to?
No one has time. And do you want to fly out to Boston? Because I ain't going nowhere. And actually, I'd rather do it at my
house.
However, we can do it in my basement.
However, it's not, you know, let's think for a second. It's not a bad suggestion as far as, you know, eventually at one point putting together something where there could be topics shared or a roundtable discussion or something at someone else's seminar.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, that's cool. But I mean, I'm not going to be putting one on. I'm in no position to do that.
Me neither.
Let's see. I think that is, that's about it. I don't know, John, you got anything else before we talk to Nick, or I talk to Nick?
Well, here's the thing, though, because I was kind of thinking of what you were saying about yoga, and, well, maybe I'd prefer an osteoporotic individuals to do, you know, weight training or whatever.
Yeah, I'd rather have them start with some weights because it's going to be a lot easier for them to get benefits from that. But instead of having to like learn all the yoga moves and getting just being able to perform them correctly, I think it's a lot safer to do dumbbell stuff too.
Why?
Why? Because it can be a much more controlled environment if they're with like a trainer who is one-on-one, like watching them one-on-one the whole time, and you know they could just have them do like very standard exercises, or they can have them even throw them on a machine, and they can still do some you know pretty intense stuff without having to. I mean, if you hold. Like if you're holding one of those yoga poses incorrectly, and you like usually hold them for about a minute, aren't you just like reinforcing any kind of crap? What's the word I'm looking for? Hold on 1 second. You know what I'm
trying to say?
Oh, you know what?
Dun, 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 dun.
Okay, like
dun,
say dun, dun, reinforcing, dun, dun. You know, negative things like we talk about with anterior pelvic
dysfunctional movement
with women and Cressy What's that?
Dysfunctional movement.
Yes, thank you. Go on.
So are you implying that weightlifting will somehow correct dysfunctional movement on its own?
No, I'm saying it's going to be easier. I mean, obviously they're going to need some kind of prescription if they have, you know, severe anterior pelvic tilt issues, or if they're sitting at a desk all day and their hips are incredibly tight. Someone's going to need to tell them to, you know, you need more glute activation. Someone's going to need to say that, or you're going to have to stretch out your hip flexors. Someone's going to need to say that. But I keep losing my train of thought. But what I'm saying is it's going to be, especially if they have a trainer. I mean, you can get them almost any trainer as long as they're not going to have them doing some, you know, crazy crap in the Smith machine. Now, they're going to be able to get a pretty good training effect from using free weights than they would get from yoga. And it's more, like, common. Like, you can go into a lot of gyms and you'll see posters and crap on the wall on how to do this stuff, and it's pretty easy. Like a lot of them can do box squats if it says, you know, keep your arch in your spine, keep your chest nice and tall, you know, bring your hips back.
So your argument basically is that dynamic complex movement will be easier to learn than isometric holds.
Well, yes and no. I mean, okay, tell me this. Have you ever gone into a gym and see someone performing a plank incredibly incorrectly?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. It's going to happen.
Have I seen people performing biceps curls incredibly incorrectly?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay,
so I don't think that it's necessarily, you know what I mean? Like, I know what you're saying, but I think and you're also adding a slightly different twist to it because you're saying, well, weight-bearing, you know, weight training with a trainer will be better than taking yoga. But yoga, you have an instructor there, too. I could do yoga by myself, and then I'd probably do it very wrong.
Sure,
I could do weight training by myself.
But when you have a class of 40 people, it's hard to keep an eye on everyone.
But if they're not moving, then it's not as hard. Think about what we do as coaches, right? We'll have a weight room full of, like, you know, 10, 15, 20 athletes at a time, easy. If not upwards of like 30 or 40, if we have the whole team in, which is rare, and we do the same thing. We run around all over the place correcting form. We do it all the time.
Yeah, you have things that you're looking for the whole time. Yeah.
And then that may just be, again, then that may just be begging the question, all right, so do we want a class of 40 people where it's really not possible to keep your eye on everyone? So that may be a fault of how yoga is taught. But traditionally, yoga was never taught with groups of 40 people. Yoga was taught with, you know, you learn from a master, and that would be in a small setting, if not a one-on-one situation. So, again, we have to look at the product of how are we instructed currently versus what is the actual practice of yoga or practice of anything that we're discussing. Because, again, we could describe a situation where There's an individual exercising. They don't know what they're doing. They're using poor form. They're doing too much, and they're reinforcing bad habits. Tell me what I was just describing, because it could be anything, yeah. including weight training, including sprinting.
All right,
including
I'm biased.
Anything that we...
I'm biased, all right?
All right.
I'm biased. All right? I'm willing
just
to admit
just
that.
Just throw that out there.
No, I'm willing to admit that. Yes. But, okay, we're going to have to wrap this up. We're having fillets tonight, and my steak's done. So I've been motioned from my bedroom door that I should wrap up the show.
Very good.
All right, so that's it. I think we should try. I think we're going to try to get Mike Robertson on the show next week just to chill out, just talk with Mike, cool. you know, get his input on some of the mailbag questions. And basically, you know, it's like having John and Mike at the same time is a pretty good deal. So,
yeah, that'd be fun.
As also in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, two minds are better than one. Double the pleasure, triple the fun. Don't forget, folks. All right, we're going to talk to Nick Tumanello right now. I hope you enjoy the interview. Don't forget to check out The Fitcast on iTunes. Check us out at thefitcast.com. We'll have new blog updates on Destination Abs. Also, some more comments about yoga. And probably, I think I'm going to have a book review of Dan John's book. All right, it's great. Go pick it up. Buy it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We will see you next time.
Good night.
Good night, watch on.
I don't know. Good night, yoga?
Good night, yoga. With me right now is Nick Tumanello of PerformanceU.net. You've probably also seen his articles on TNation.com and seen some of his stuff in Men's Health and Men's Fitness. Nick, thank you for coming on the show and welcome.
How's it going, man? I appreciate you having me.
Well, we have a bunch of questions from the listeners, and you know, we got a couple questions about this, and I've talked to some of my colleagues about it who have checked out some of your work. But you're kind of known for creating new exercises, like things that you know no one would think of in their right mind, but are very effective. Like, what's your process when creating new and innovative exercises?
That's a great question, actually. I have this. You know, it's definitely very, the most important thing to me is effectiveness. I always say in all my workshops, you know, we always separate as trainers and coaches what's cool versus what's effective. And there's nothing wrong with something that, if it is cool, as long as it is effective, but just doing something new because it's new and nobody else is doing it, or just doing something because it seems cool or fun, that's okay for your own personal experimentation, but not if people are paying you and spending valuable time with you just to, you know, learn cool stuff. They need to be given what's most effective.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime I come up with something, it's because I feel that, you know, I need to do something or accomplish some goal, and then I look into my, you know, my brain or my books or my videos, encyclopedia of repertoire of activities, and go, wait a minute, there's really nothing out there that has been developed, you know, to accommodate this. So I just kind of take it upon myself to say, okay, well, how can I get this done? And that's just kind of always been my mentality. And, you know, that's the beauty of the industry is I would say we can do anything we want as long as we have a good reason for it. So, you know, it just becomes from working with clients and having a lot of experience with different ranges of people, ages and strength levels and athletic abilities and goals. If you can find something that works really well for everybody, just because no one else is doing it, if I battle test it and I go, wow, this seems to be some merit to this, you know, that's some of the things that I'll try to publish, which you've seen.
So really just
to fill a gap that I think has been left open is kind of why I do that kind of stuff.
Gotcha. And you know, hitting on that, which exercise or movement or stretch or which one are you most proud of, and which one do you use most with your clients, and you know, why is it something that you know, is there a deficiency that you see a lot in your clients that you find you have to address?
Which one am I most proud of, like for developing? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one that you know you find that has just been, you know, really effective, and some that hasn't been out there before.
I would probably say the super dog, and you know, when when you've been, I'm a young guy. I actually turned 30 this month. I got a big birthday coming up, and I've been doing this since I've been 18. And I always try to grow and learn. And so even though I can't say I've been in this for a long time, like a Mike Boyle can, that's a decent amount of time to be in this industry as it's changed. And so even some of these things that I've come up with and I've seen that are new, you know, I can't, you know, claim but the stamp and say, hey, no one has ever done this before. Maybe I saw something similar a long time ago. Maybe it was just a client did something by accident, and I went, wait a minute, that's kind of a good idea. and I went, and it gives me an idea. But I know for a fact that, you know, and I'll tweak it or whatnot, but I know for a fact that the Superdog, I had, it's just something I completely, you know, came up with. And I like that exercise out of all of them because it has applications in all realms from, you know, from rehabilitation to assessment to strength and conditioning. And I think anybody can find a purpose to use that movement. And it's one of those movements that as long as somebody can get in the position, you can't do it wrong. You know, the position forces you to do everything right and minimize compensation or cheat patterns or whatever you want to call it. So it makes the coach's job very easy. They either do it, check yes, or they don't, check no. So that's probably why I'm probably most proud of that one, because it kind of crosses all borders.
Yeah, you featured that in your one of your articles on T-Nation, the 5 new exercises article. And can you just briefly kind of explain for people out there, you know, you say in the article that it's a variation of like a Superman and a bird dog. But how do you generally use it in practice? Is it more of like a warm-up kind of thing or what?
Well, yeah, I mean, in general, it came from an addition to like a little hip circuit. We call them the dirty dog circuits. You know, you sit on all fours and you kind of swing your hip around like a dog cocking its leg on a, you know, to pee on a, you know, on mm-hmm. a curb or something like that. And I just saw a lot of lower back work in there. So we decided to, you know, I decided to throw that, take the lower back out of it. And that's the strategy we came up with. So it started off as more of a, you know, warm up prep, whatever you want to call it. But I found that so many people had a hard time doing it that, you know, it started to become more of this core training, torso training, activation, you know, whatever you want to call it. And most people are doing activation right now. One thing about activation is all our muscles are always on. The only time you have a muscle that's turned off is unless you're dead or you have paralysis. So this whole thing of, you know, and I'm guilty of using these terms too. They can be a little misleading if you think these muscles are always on. It's just that how quickly or readily they turn on relative to the other muscles around them, given a movement pattern. So what these movements will do will kind of teach your brain to say, hey, listen, when I go through this pattern, you know, this is the muscle that I want to fire as your primary, you know, action, and everything kind of spawns away from that, as opposed to maybe something that your body is, if your body is not doing that. So it's not that the muscles are not active, it's that this kind of makes a phone call to make one maybe fire a little quicker or a little stronger. And I'll give you a prime example of the application of activation. When I just had ACL surgery this past October on my right knee. Mm-hmm. And when we started to, and the two most important things when you have after an ACL construction are rebuilding hamstring strength. This is at least what the most recent research says. Rebuilding hamstring strength and proprioception. So everybody yells about balance devices, but that's one of the biggest things you can do when you're initially rehabbing a knee. So as we would start to do some hamstring work, some basic leg curl like on a Swiss ball, and I can't remember how far into our program that we did this, but it was pretty early, my knee would feel like it would lock up. For whatever reason, there wasn't enough balance between muscles happening there, muscles firing, and my knee would just shift and things would lock up a little bit just from swelling or whatnot. When I would do squats, like partial squats, my knee would lock up and it would feel like it jammed me. Even though I feel like I had the strength to go lower, my joint wouldn't allow me. Mm-hmm. But if I did hamstring curls first, I could get up and I could squat lower immediately. So because what was happening was my hamstring wasn't engaging enough before, not to bring my leg, my femur and everything back, I can't get into the specifics because I don't know exactly what's happening to my knee, but all I knew is if I did not force my hamstrings to activate a little harder by previously doing an exercise that isolated them, I could not squat well.
Gotcha.
So that kind of sold the concept of activation on me, and the importance of it. So it goes beyond just warm-up. So that was kind of a long explanation for this. And a good warm-up should also be can serve as an assessment. And, you know, we can change daily what muscles are tight, sometimes hourly, you know, based off of where we just came from. I mean, if you just came from sitting at a desk for 6 hours, you're going to be tight in your hip flexors mm-hmm. because you're just sitting in hip flexion for 6 hours. So maybe that day, you know, you should do more glute activation. But if you've spent your day kickboxing, you know, you went to a long MMA workshop and you've done 100 different punching and kicking drills, you know, you might have a whole different, your torso rotators might be a little overactive at that point. So these things can change daily. So if I get someone, I prep them a little bit through a warm-up, I see, hey, for whatever reason, that glute's not firing, I'm going to now take that super dog activity into their workout as well, so that it'll pop up not only in the warm-up, but it'll also pop up as maybe active recovery in between sets of bench press or chin-ups or something like that.
Gotcha. And, you know, speaking of MMA, I mean, I feel like we should mention this. They just had the MMA 100 last night. Nick, how did you feel about the results?
My friend, I'm heartbroken over this, but I was at a very late wedding last night, and I didn't get out of the wedding until 1 o'clock in the morning, and so I'm completely out of the loop, and please don't tell me the results, but all I did was complain to my girlfriend how I was missing UFC 100, so.
Well, I will make sure to stay, but well, let's go back to, you know, a question that we get from a lot of listeners, and we have a lot of trainers that listen to the show, and you know, a lot of people that are thinking about getting into the industry are just starting to get into the industry, and they always like to hear about, you know, how our guests got to where they are today. So, Nick, like, what's your story? Like, you know, where did you start in terms of, like, college and into where you are today?
Well, I went to school for physical therapy assistant. I knew I never wanted to be a physical therapist because at the time that I was going to school, they had just turned, changed the requirements to become a full-time PT, where you actually had to have a doctorate, which is like 2 extra years of schooling and all these other things. And actually what happened was, it kind of, I don't know how much you follow PT or whatnot, but it kind of, for a short period of time, it's just starting to come out of it now. And now you have this economy crunch and job crisis and whatnot. But most of the people that were going to PT school, when they found that out, actually dropped out of that and went right to medical school to be, you know, general practitioners and doctors and whatnot, because obviously the general pay of a general doctor is a lot more than the average physical therapist. Mm-hmm. But the schooling is very, very close. So that caused a tremendous job shortage in the physical therapy realm, and I guess it may be coming out of it now. I'm not sure. But so that kind of turned me off from going to full PT school as well. So, I mean, as far as like this monstrosity of college time, I probably don't have as much as some of these other guys who are, you know, physiologists and whatnot. I studied physical therapy assistants, but I was one of those people that was truly dedicated into, you know, learning by doing, learning by experience, and that I never thought there was anything I couldn't learn in school. That I couldn't learn from a book on my own that I could learn in school. So I probably read every book I could get my hands on, from neural developmental books to you know, body work books to learning styles. I mean, to everything. And I was a total conference junkie. You know what I mean? I was going to, like, you know, 4 or 6 conferences a year from the time I was probably 17, actually. And a big influence was also my mother. My mother's a medical doctor, and she was a bodybuilder in the, when I say a female bodybuilders in the 80s were not female bodybuilders now. They look, you know, they're a lot bigger. That you look like basically a figure girl at that time. Mm-hmm. So I don't want anybody thinking that my, you know, I had this credible Hulk looking mom. So she was a bodybuilder in the 80s. So I literally grew up in gyms. I never liked babysitters. I demanded that my mother take me to the gym. And I would, like, you know, I was doing chin-ups and stuff and lat pull downs when I was like 5-6 years old, running around the gym while my mom was training for shows. So I learned a lot through her, and she actually spoke. She was an athletic trainer in West Virginia for a while at a medical school out there. And the name escapes me. I want to say Alderson Brodus, I think. It's a PA school. It's kind of really been in my family, and I've really been, you know, kind of, you know, nothing was crammed down my throat, but it's definitely been a part of my life for a very long time.
Well, you mentioned a couple books, and you know, I think that's something that a lot of the trainers that are up and coming, they just don't do enough. They don't do any kind of learning outside of school, whether they, you know, go to college and get that bachelor's and they figure, oh, okay, I pretty much know everything I need to know right now. I'm ready to go change lives. But, you know, what are some books that you think, you know, every aspiring trainer, every beginner trainer, or maybe just trainers in general should make sure to check out, or they should have in their library? Are there like two or three books that you think are just very important?
Well, I have to say, before I say that, you know, there's a difference between, I think this is some quote maybe I've heard from a Mike Boyle or a Martin Rooney or somebody, but, you know, there's a very big difference between knowing things and learning things, and I think we should never say we know something. As soon as you say, I know that, you're basically you're closing the door on it. You're saying there's nothing more that I could put inside this room of knowing, because I know all there is to know. So we don't know. Can I cuss? Can you say the S word on this show?
Sure.
Okay. My favorite quote from my good friend JC Santana from Private Conversations is, he said, "Nobody knows shit." It's my favorite quote from anybody, because it really, here's what it comes down to. You have lots of people, I mean, you know it, you get to talk to all, you know, people who write for Teen Nation and speak for Perform Better and whatnot, and how many people as you interview say different things, you know, and some people a little stronger mind opinion than others, you know, others are a little more flexible with it, but basically in the short, you have a lot of people from different parts of the country, different parts of the world, all getting great results, but doing different things.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact is, we don't know anything. We just know what works for us in our setting and trends and just makes good decisions. But there is no one right way to do things, especially with the human body. You know what I mean? So I think understanding a little bit of just you know, philosophy and interpretation, you know, that might be good. One of my personal favorite books that has nothing to do with just fitness is more just a way of thinking and philosophy is called The Warrior Within. And it's basically all about Bruce Lee's philosophies. To me, it's an amazing book. And if, you know, if you open my copy, you'd probably see almost every sentence, every page highlighted. it's pretty awesome because he talks about, in martial arts, what's going on right now. He talked about in the 60s and 70s how, you know, if every martial art says they have the only way to do it, then why were other martial arts developed, you know, and things like that. So he talks about just thinking for yourself and what works for you and that. But as far as from a strict educational perspective, oh my God, there's so many books. Probably my favorite on program design is J.C. Santana's The Essence of Program Design. I like his delivery because he cuts out all the, you know, there is no, you know, mesocycles and microcycles. It's, you know, because I don't even remember which one is which. They're so confusing. It's training day, training week, training month, training year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not that tough. I don't, you know, mesocycle, microcycle, ridiculous. You know, that's science. You know, that's white coat talk. So I love that book. I probably refer to that book a good bit just to see. I'm trying to think. I love Mel Siff's Facts and Fallacies of Fitness. I think that is just a fantastic book. You know, scientifically research and say, okay, you hear this, but let's look at the science behind it. There's so many great books, you know, but those are two that I really, that stand out, that I probably look at the most, along with the Bruce Lee book.
Well, we got a question from a listener named John. He says that he has a question about knee pain. What advice would you give a very active 44-year-old male with the following symptoms? There is pain in one knee when descending stairs. The same pain is felt while squatting. The pain is more severe when the knee isn't warmed up. Sometimes a snapping sound is heard and felt when bending the knee, although there is no pain. There is no pain while walking. The pain limits the intensity and duration of my workouts. I am trying to decide if I should go to my doctor to get it checked. Any advice or general discussion of knee/joint health would be appreciated. And please don't tell me that I'm getting old.
Okay, well, you know, you're only as old as you feel, I guess. So I would say, I mean, at the risk of sounding, I'm trying to be helpful with this and not sound like I'm completely blowing it off. So with all due respect, and I don't want to sound cocky or anything like this, I would definitely not be asking this question to some random trainer or coach on the radio. I would be going to see a physical therapist who can see you and assess you and who's qualified to do that. But, I mean, I could tell you a few things. It sounds like when you increase the load, you know, you're getting a little bit of pain when you go downstairs, but when you walk, it seems okay. That sounds like more of a high load related problem, which in many cases is an inflammatory issue. So, I mean, that's just kind of generally what it sounds like. I can't say exactly where you have inflammation. Could be patellar tendon, could be a bursa. I mean, if you want to do a quick little, bad alignment doesn't always dictate, you know, pain if you can compensate for bad alignment well, but one of the quick little assessments that you could do for yourself is sit on your butt on the floor with your legs straight out in front of you like you're going to do a good old-fashioned high school hamstring, you know, sit and reach test. And take your, if it's your right knee, take your two fingers, your index finger and your thumb, and put it on each side of your patella as to, you know, squeeze your patella between the two fingers. And then with your left thumb, put your thumb on your tibial tuberosity, which is the top of your tibia, just below your right hand, your kneecap. And if your thumb, your left thumb that's on your tibia, should be centered in between your thumb and your index finger. That means you have fairly decent patella alignment.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're offset either way, that could definitely predispose you to, you know, dysfunctional patterns and obviously experiencing pain much quicker and easier. So, but is that the only one diagnosed? No, I can't diagnose anything like that. I'm not a physical therapist. But so my first advice to him, go see, find the best PT in your realm and go see him, and definitely don't go to a strength and conditioning coach for it, because that's not what we're qualified to do.
Good call. Next question that we have is from Matt. He says that, I'm just getting involved with MMA and practice 2 times per week. I have trained mainly for looks in the past, but I am needing something that will help my performance. I have been doing barbell complexes, intervals, metabolic lifting, and strength work. I just have no idea how to set up my workout for the week. For example, I don't know how many sessions of each I should do for the week. I don't know how to set up the order either. My weak areas would be arm strength and conditioning, so any help would be appreciated, Matt.
All right, that's a great question. The guy definitely described his goals and whatnot very well. I mean, if arm strength and conditioning are a factor, they definitely need to be prioritized, and that's very obvious. But I would say this, how often you train as far as strength and conditioning training should be dictated around how often you're doing sport-specific training, by meaning, you know, going to your MMA school and actually, you know, rolling and doing Muay Thai class and doing MMA class and your Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu classes. So, and then if you're sparring, because sparring obviously is brutal if you're doing gauntlet rounds and, you know, all the things that we do on a regular basis. So, you know, if your training cannot be so hard that it interferes with your actual sport-specific performance. So I will tell you what we do here at Ground Control in Baltimore. We have a fight team, and we're all under Henzo Gracie, and then we have some amateur guys and then people who just are coming in for fun and want to do the conditioning. We have 2 times a week of sparring and 2 times a week of strength and conditioning. before a fight. So if nobody has a fight scheduled, we focus primarily on, you know, strength movements, you know, your squats, your bench presses, lower rep, higher weight, kind of, you know, longer rest type of movements. And then a lot of times I love 300s. I love, you know, putting two cones 25 yards apart and do six round trips or 12 laps, however, or 12, you know, back and forth, however you want to look at it. As conditioning, it's just brutal. It's very old school, but I just see the fighters just really know that gets it done. Cagey, we like Aerodyne work for our conditioning, and then we do throw some barbell complexes in towards the end as well. As we get to a fight, we'll normally train, depending on where their weight class is, how far they are from their weight. The further they are from the weight, the further we'll wait, or the longer we'll take to train. But most of these guys are in good shape, so they're not far from their weight class anyway, which is how a fighter should be. You should always be about 6 weeks out of a fight, especially if you're an amateur, because you never know what kind of somebody's going to fight for a belt, and they get hurt, and you've got an 0-3 record, and they need a guy in that weight class, you better be able to jump in there, because if you win that one, next thing you know, you're a champ. So, no, that happens. And the amateurs, whew, that happens a lot. We see it. I've got a few experiences like that. So if any amateur guys out there, if you are fighting, always be ready. You know, you can't always keep yourself in pristine fight shape, but try to stay, you know, 4 to 6 weeks out of a fight at all times. That's my advice. So what we'll do is we'll actually train for 6 weeks. It's actually 7 weeks out of a fight, I should say, to be honest, because the last week is a rest, and it's all technical and tactical work. And we still only do 2 days a week of conditioning, but what happens is the sparring is more... The sparring is, you know, stays there, and then we only do 1 day. We do 1 day of strength maintenance, and then we do 1 day of fight-specific conditioning. So if you are entering, I got a guy right now who's going to do three-minute rounds with one-minute breaks. So we just use the said principle. So I give him metabolic circuits that do that kind of mimic, and he only does 1 day of sparring, excuse me, actually right now, and then 1 day of conditioning with me that mimics. That, you know, kind of mimics the movements, gives him the intensity of the fight without the bumps and bruises, I guess is the best way to put it. He'll work for 3 minutes very hard, and he'll rest for a minute, and then he'll do it again. So it's very, very, very simple. What I'll do is, in the beginning, is we'll see how long it takes the fighter to get through that circuit. It might take him 4 minutes, but I know it can be done in roughly three, because I've seen it done, or I've done it myself. And we'll gradually cut down the rest in between. I might give him, you know, a three-minute break, and each week we'll cut it down. So at least within a week before he breaks, he's able to go through exactly his fight time, you know, successfully in the gym. So I know that he's ready to do it in the ring.
Gotcha. You know, something that this question kind of brings up the topic, but the growing popularity of MMA, and I've seen people come into my gym, and I work at a commercial gym, you know, wearing the tap out shirts, and they start trying, like, I've seen a guy actually bring in like a computer printout of an MMA style workout. Like, you know, how like, what do you see when people come to your facility saying, oh, I want to be an MMA fighter? Are you seeing like a huge rise in popularity when it comes to this?
Yeah, and then you got the CrossFit stuff, which is kind of promoting, you know, hardcore and whatnot, and that's the cool thing. And you know what? I think we as coaches, we argue about, you know, who's right, who's wrong again, and I have my opinions on that stuff, and I'm not going to get into it because my opinion is my opinion. And, you know, I do what I do, and I'm happy to do that, and I'm not going to bash anybody else. I'm not helping anybody by bashing what somebody else is doing. That doesn't help anybody learn. I'm here to help people learn. So if somebody, you know, if that's what gets somebody off their rear end and motivated, more power to them, you know. And my goal is to help them do it as safely and effectively as possible. So if they're open to maybe a suggestion, hey, you know, maybe you don't need to do, you know, 100 burpees, or, you know, maybe you don't need to do 600-pound tire flips, You know what I mean? You know, but, you know, especially if you, oh, yeah, you just got, you know, you had a herniated disc 10 years ago. Yeah, I wouldn't do the tire flips. You know, if they're willing to do that stuff, fine. But, you know, if that's what motivates them and that's what finally says, you know what, I'm going to get into the gym and I'm going to have some fun, or even though I have no desire to fight, I'm 40 years old with kids, let them go. Why are we so worried about, you know what I mean, how many, you know, it's like there's got to be some sort of fun aspect, especially if it's not for performance. You know what I mean? Athletes, as, you know, a strength and conditioning coach, they can do whatever they want, especially if they're out of college, because the kids have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have somebody paying you, they want something, and they have certain expectations, and you have to find that hat. So as a trainer, you know, you have, and you already know this if you've been an experienced trainer, you know, people, you know, you have to sometimes give them a little bit what they need, but also sometimes compromise a little bit on what they want. And you have to make it kind of fun, because if it's not fun, sometimes it's not motivating, and that doesn't keep people around, you know? So would you rather have clients stay with you for 5 years because they had a little fun, or would you maybe compromise, you know, on a few crunches here and there? If they want to do crunches, fine. Last 5 minutes, go ahead and burn out your abs. Do 50 crunches. You know what I mean? And then let's do some stretches or whatever. I mean, I'm pretty particular about that kind of stuff, but if people are giving me good money and that's all they want, if they can give me 55 minutes of everything I want and I can give them 5 minutes of freestyle and to make them happy and keep coming back, I'm willing to do that. Because if I don't, I might only keep them for 2 months and then they go to some, you know, Joe Blow trainer who thinks that bicep curls are God's gift to exercise, and they're doing, you know, leg extensions and biceps curls, and they're doing crazy tire flips because it's cool, and they destroy this person when they could have been with me. You know what I mean? But they're staying with this other guy or girl because it's fun. You know, so I realized early on that I have to sometimes not let... My mother told me something very important. She said, Nick, I want you to remember one thing. It's not your session. When it comes to personal training, it's not your session, it's their session.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every trainer should understand, my mother's a brilliant woman, it's not our session, it's their session. So I think that's something that's very important for us to realize.
You make a great point, and I think it's a good way we can transition to a topic that, you know, I thought would be great to discuss, because before we started recording, I mentioned how I participated in my very first yoga class to kind of see, you know, there's a lot of trainers and coaches out there kind of try to keep their athletes or their clients, their older clients, their males or females, you know, away from yoga because of, you know, the things that can happen are sometimes reinforcing, bad movement patterns and things like that. Like, one of the big points a lot of people bring up is lumbar flexion, and also rotating the lumbar spine and promoting mobility instead of stability. And, you know, like, Nick, how do you feel about that? You know, you mentioned before, like, your mother is a yoga instructor. I mean, you definitely have some experience with this. So what do you think?
Well, first of all, I mean, I think whatever reason yoga is being grouped now into this, you know, well, they demand lumbar flexion. I think we're overthinking it, and I think we're losing a little bit of common sense. And I'm lucky enough to get to work with someone who I highly respect in the physical therapy world, Morgan Johnson. I've been talking about him lately on my little blog posts and whatever. Oh, and I'm by the way, my new website is nicktumanello.com. Actually, performanceu.net will be forwarded to nicktumanello.com, but that's where I'm directing everybody to, because that's where I'm doing blogs and really trying to pump out good information. So if you're a trainer out there and you're really looking for, you know, educational, I would go to that site. So just make sure I want to get that clear.
No, definitely, and you got tons of videos on the site too, so it's definitely something where you can almost learn something new every day there. So I'm really enjoying your new site.
I appreciate it. Yeah, the Performance U site is just kind of a flat site, and I'm pretty getting ready to do away with it and just push it over. So if you typed in Performance U, just go to nicktumanello.com.
Cool.
But anyway, I mean, I think it's been taking way too far now. I think, again, we're overreacting, as Cosgrove or Boyle says. You know, we overreact in the beginning, underreact at the end. You know, Morgan Johnson, who's the PT I mentioned, he always learned in school, and what he tells his patients, and this is for every joint, every range of motion, once a day, all the way. All right? And, you know, it really comes down to, hey, if you don't use it, you lose it. Lumbar flexion in normal low load activity, bending over to tie your shoes, bending over to pick up your water bottle, getting in and out of your car, whatever, you know, picking up, you know, something that you drop, is normal functional movement one of us should be capable of doing. Okay? So in that case, to say that that should not happen, in my opinion, I don't like to say so, you know, something is silly, but I think it's a little bit close to ridiculous. I have to say I feel that strongly about it. Doing deadlifts in the gym with a rounded spine is also ridiculous, but, you know, on the opposite realm. But you can't take one blanket statement and apply it to everything. And, yes, I know, you know, the Stu McGill said there's the most pressure in the lumbar spine. Yes, but it's pressure that we should all be able to tolerate. You know, I mean, there's certain things that our bodies, you know, our bodies are not made of glass. And you know, I'll give you a prime example. And I'm one, obviously, if you've read any of my articles or watched my videos, I'm very biomechanically conscious. You know, I wrote the How Not to Warm Up article and all these things. And so, I promise you that nobody's more conscious of, you know, risk versus benefit than I am. You could be as equally, but I promise you, you don't put as much thinking. Nobody puts more thinking into that than I do. I can promise you that. Because I you know, to me, it's all about value. I can't have somebody pay me for something unless I've really put a lot of thought into it and know that I'm giving them the best value for their money. So I do think about that. But, you know, what's good with 400-pound deadlifts, it does not apply to normal low-load movement. So, we should be able to flex our lumbar spine in normal everyday life. And then yoga, you know, if you've got past disc herniation problems, then no. I would tell your yoga instructor, no, I'm not doing the down dog. I'm not doing, you know, this or that movement. But if you have healthy, if you're a fairly healthy individual with and you can move pretty fairly pain-free, injury-free, I think yoga would be not a bad thing for you. I think yoga is a little drawn out, you know, an hour and a half of yoga or whatever. That's sometimes a little too much, but I also don't think it's going to kill anybody. And if you look at wrestler, I mean, watch a, you know, and I understand this is, you're talking about youth here, people who are strong and can tolerate it, but, you know, if you look at, watch a high school wrestling match or, you know, college or even some UFC, it happens more in wrestling, you start with a completely flexed spine and people are pulling these guys down through their necks, which is the furthest, the longest lever arm that you could get to the lumbar spine. And none of these guys are blowing their backs out at all. Actually, they got paraspinals that look like, you know, two phone poles next to their spine. So, you know, am I saying that that's how you should treat a 45-year-old man who sits at a desk? No, but just because you're flexing doesn't mean you're guaranteed you're going to blow out your back. But, you know, I don't know. I'm rambling a little bit. I think lumbar spine is lumbar flexion is good in low load activity, but it's not. It has no place in the weight room. How about that?
No, it's very, very valid point. I did enjoy my yoga session, and I probably will be going back, you know, once a week, once every 2 weeks. It's definitely something. You know, it's nice to kind of mix it up a little bit and to not be. I was very stuck in my ways after hearing that yoga could possibly kill me, which it didn't. So I'm very happy that that did not happen.
Yeah, and I guess I'll say one other thing, too.
Yeah.
I mean, yoga's been around for a long time, and there's plenty of people that have done it with injuries and never had a problem. And there's, you know what I mean? It's so that we really don't know. We really can never put our, you know, and there's a lot of people that good PTs in Australia that look at Stu McGill stuff and say, he's a little bit off base on things. I'm not going to open that can of worms because I'm not them. Keep in mind, Nick didn't say that. This is what other PTs are saying. So again, there's always, but yes, there's more pressure on the lumbar spine, but we can tolerate it. And if you want to think about one thing, if you take a 1 pound dumbbell, just to understand this, if you're standing up and you take a 1 pound dumbbell and you're holding it down by your pocket with a straight arm and your right arm, and you bring it out as to do like a front raise, and you hold it completely 90 degrees, like straight out in front of you, that is equal to 10 pounds of force on your lumbar spine, okay? So now you can imagine, even if you have good, you know, a good anterior tilt and a good lordotic curve while doing a deadlift, because that weight is slightly out in front of you, it's not necessarily equal to 10 pounds, but I would probably, I think it's equal to 4 or 5 pounds. And if you're deadlifting 400 pounds, you can multiply that times 5 to the forces of your back. So you've got guys out there who are deadlifting, you know, 400, 500, 600 pounds, which is, comes out to be over thousands of pounds on your lumbar spine in good alignment, but are arguing that, you know, there's a few extra 100 pounds of force on your lumbar spine when you're bent over. You know, that's going to be a problem, you know, and we say, well, it's a little less, we're a little less strong because we're flexed, but the body can still tolerate it. It's designed to tolerate that.
We're coming up on about 40 minutes here, and one thing I want to hit on one more time before we do wrap it up is, you know, the concept of coaches and scope of practice, and you talked about it a little bit before, but, you know, talking as you, talking to the coaches and the trainers that listen to the show, like, what kind of advice can you give to them about that?
Sure, and I would actually say, you know, go find, if you don't get a chance to work with a PT, go find one. And ask the people who are rehabbing people's backs and know about these things and are looking at more than just reading one book or doing a weekend seminar, and they'll probably tell you the same thing that my PT, you know, tells us. So, and there'll be even times when people with disc issues are still demanded to do some lumbar flexion because they need to get that back because it's a functional range of motion, and if they can do it in a safe, controlled manner, then they should be able to do it. But that's very patient-specific. You know, if one guy's case, it might not be a good thing. The other guy's case, that's for a PT to figure out. But I have to say this. I think it's great that trainers and coaches are beyond now just giving people, you know, exercising them blindly, and now we're looking, not exercising them blindly, we're looking at movement patterns and what may be the, we're assessing, you know, more than just, okay, you know, push, pull, whatever. We're looking at movement patterns and saying, okay, this may be tight, this may be weak. But I think in some cases it can be taken too far. And, you know, a physical therapist goes to school for years and years specifically for these types of, you know, of things, you know, to evaluate people and diagnose the source of a problem. And some, like every other profession, some are better than others at it. But even the best physical therapist in the world will tell you, this is my best guess. You know, and the more I'll work with this patient, I may look and go, you know what, that wasn't the right way. I wasn't barking up the right tree, but I think I'm better now after a few sessions. But now we have trainers who have taken a weekend course or read a book and decide that now we're qualified to, you know, to actually start diagnosing. And I, and a lot of the questions that I get from people, hey, Nick, you know, what would you say for my pain, this, that, and the other? And I just tell them, go to a PT. I'm a, you know. So it's nice for us to understand things in the PT realm so we can better accommodate people and better know when to refer out. But I think we should, anytime somebody actually has pain or discomfort, we should not be trying to, we should be trying to work around it and help people move as efficiently as possible. But if we can't see something clear up within a few sessions, oh, well, maybe your knee, you know, knee alignment. Your knee hurts, okay, your knee drops in when you squat. Let's try to keep your knees in better alignment. And if the pain goes away, great. You know, we just looked at the overall movement, and that's why I like Greg Cook's functional movement screen. We're not looking at muscles and what's tight. We're just looking at general movement patterns. But as soon as we start saying this is tight and this is weak, we're acting like we're basically diagnosing, and there's any number of reasons why you could have a restricted range of motion or a compensatory pattern, and it's not within our scope to be doing that.
That's a great point.
And I guess I'll say one thing, too. One of the best physical therapists in the world, Mark Comerford, and I know Boyle's talked about him and Alvin Mills talked about him, and I'm lucky enough to be good friends with this guy and talk to him on a regular basis, and he and I are actually supposed to be doing a video project together very soon. He said basically everything he says to me is, like, noteworthy, but as far as movement screens go and whatnot, he said one thing. He said there's a difference between dysfunction and a variation of normal. So, you know, we tend to put everybody on this optimal, what's optimal movement and optimal, you know, and what it's really coming down to is that compensation is completely normal and is in our design. The problem is uncontrolled compensation. So if we have uncontrolled compensation, that's what we want to address, and maybe it's better addressed with a physical therapist. But just because somebody doesn't look right, or whatever, if they have no pain and no, we should do our best to help them move as effectively as possible, but then thinking that demands correction might not be the best option, especially from someone who doesn't know, who hasn't spent their life studying what needs to be corrected and what doesn't anyway. We've just read a book, and, you know, you can't read a dentist book and all of a sudden start working on your little brother's teeth. So, you know, we read a few books, and all of a sudden we're spinal experts. PTs don't say this kind of stuff if you really look at them. If you really listen to them, I should say.
Well, I think we're going to wrap it up there, Nick, but people, definitely check out Nick's site at nicktumanello.com, and he's got some great stuff. You know, for the time being at performanceu.net, he's got a couple DVDs, definitely the warm-up progression stuff. If you checked out his article on how not to warm up on tnation.com, those are definitely worth checking out. And, you know, Nick, I'm going to leave you with one last question. Is there anything our listeners should keep a lookout for? Do you have any articles that are going to be popping up soon? Are you going to be speaking anywhere, anything like that?
Yeah, real quick, I'm speaking at AFPA Beach Jam in Myrtle Beach. I have four classes there. AFPAfitness.com is their website. I'm four classes there. I will be at ECA Miami, ECA Thrive in Miami. That's in November. I will be speaking for the staff, but it's also open for people to come in Hawaii and Maui for the Ritz-Carlton in September. That will be up. We haven't finalized the date yet, but it'll be up on my site. Doing a webinar this coming Monday. That's nicktumanello.com as well. And I'm definitely planning on cranking out DVDs. We got just filmed two more DVDs and trying to keep those out. So
nice, man. Maui. That sounds like it should be pretty nice.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I know. It's a rough life, isn't it?
Well, Nick, again, thanks. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. And people out there, make sure to check out Nick's site, nicktumanello.com. You know, that's his main blog right now, and also his newsletter to sign up there as well. And Nick, I really hope we can have you on again in the future. And again, I appreciate your taking your time out on this Sunday afternoon, I guess now, to talk with us.
Absolutely, man. Well, listen, it's my pleasure. I'm glad that we could finally get this together, and I appreciate everybody who's listened. And I, you know, I think we should all just take everybody's, you know, not just follow any one person. We should just listen to everybody and try things out, and don't be afraid to question anything that I say or anybody else says, and see what works best for you in your setting. That's basically my advice I would like to close with.
All right, cool. Well, again, thanks everyone for listening to the show this week. We'll see you next week. Take care. To the off-topic discussion, which I didn't think we were going to have, but then Jonathan Fass called me from an air tunnel. John, how you doing?
I'm doing well from the air tunnel.
How's that treating you?
Yeah, it's treating me windy. Now I'm on my way back to Delaware. I spent the weekend up in North Jersey seeing my parents and hanging out with my buddies and all that kind of stuff. So headed back. And, you know, I missed you, Kevin, and I was thinking, why don't I just give this guy a call?
Yeah, so you called my Skype phone number while I was sitting at my computer, and
just about to record. How incredible is that timing?
Well, to be fair, I recorded the interview 3 hours ago with Nick. But, so.
Yeah, that's okay.
So, MMA.
Dude.
UFC fight 100.
How sick was that?
You know what? I thought the spoilers, if you haven't watched the fight yet, because I interviewed Nick, and, you know, Nick's like a big MMA guy, and I'm like, Nick, you know, what did you think of the fights last night? And he goes, Kevin, I did not watch it last night. I was at a wedding. Do not say anything.
Wow.
I'm like, oh, man, I'm so sorry.
Wow. Okay, so spoilers. So anyone listening right now, just fast forward for, I'm going to guess, about 10-15 minutes. And then you should be all right.
How about 5 minutes?
Dude. Oh, my God. The fights were sick.
I only watched the last three because I watched it on Ustream.
Okay.
And
yeah, I didn't see the prelims, which I was really, really mad about because I really want to see John Jones, but I didn't actually get them, and then you have to like pay for them online, and I was like, oh, forget it. But the first fight, controversial, and I wasn't sure that I agreed with the call split decision, but it was an interesting fight for like the first two rounds. I felt the third was kind of muddy, but
John, do you have your windows down?
No, I don't. I'm just driving on the turnpike.
Gotcha.
Is that loud?
That's fine. It adds character.
Flavor.
No.
A little flavor.
No.
But then we had Bisping get demolished. I mean, that was like knockout of the year.
Yeah, there was lots of blood on the mat. I saw that. I should take that back. All I saw that I can actually talk to you about is the St. Pierre fight and the Brock Lesnar fight.
Oh, you missed it! Oh my God, you have to like.
I saw the knockout on ESPN on SportsCenter though.
Okay,
he got destroyed.
He got clocked.
He hit him standing up. Then he hit him once on the ground, and it was it. That one.
Well, Bisping kept circling into his power. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, I don't understand why you would do that. He kept circling into the power. You knew it was coming. You knew it was coming, and then he just got thrashed. I mean, that was a ridiculous knockout. He was stiff on the mat and with his eyes fluttering. That was absolutely ridiculous.
Yes.
Amazing. Amazing knockout. George St. Pierre, unreal. And, you know, I mean, everyone's a George St. Pierre fan. I mean, that's not even something novel. But every time the man fights, you get so nervous because you're like, I love this guy. I don't want him to lose. And the challenger, oh, my God, he's so good. This could really be it. This could be the one that George St. Pierre loses. And then you finish, like, one or two rounds, and you're like, wow, unreal. I mean, you can't even appreciate how talented George St. Pierre is, even as you're watching it. It's mind-blowing.
Agreed.
Yeah, absolutely mind-blowing. The way he changed levels, dropped to the chute, and just took him down at will. I mean, at will. And you know what? Give credit to Alves because, I mean, no one even stands up from a George St. Pierre takedown. I mean, once he gets you on the ground, he keeps you on the ground. I mean, BJ Penn couldn't even really get up against George St. Pierre, and Alves did, but wow. Absolutely incredible performance. I mean, it's just unreal.
So let's talk about Brock Lesnar because I used to watch the World Wrestling Federation, and you know what? I kind of got out of it as I transitioned to college, and that's when he became a big player, and it looks like he's still as incredibly big as he was when he was in the WWE, and you know, I don't think this dude's going to lose.
No. I mean, I'll tell you what, I actually thought Mir was going to win, and I knew I was going against the card there, but I was like, you know what, I think Mir is too talented, he understands what Brock Lesnar's power is about, he'll be able to circle out of it, he'll be able to, you know, to box him and whatever, and oh my God, was I wrong.
Well,
I mean,
to quote Back to the Future, you were wrong, dude.
Yeah, I mean, that absolutely unbelievable performance. I mean, you can't, Lesnar, as soon as he wants to put you somewhere, he's going to put you somewhere. And it's exactly right. Like, at this point in MMA's, like, history, we're really at a point where it's not just the best martial artists and mixed martial artists, it's the best athletes that are at the top now. And you just see that. The guys that are at the top in every category, not only some of the best mixed martial artists as far as technique, as far as rounded skills, but my God, they are athletes. And Brock Lesnar moves so fast for someone that big. It's unbelievable. And before that, Mir was that guy. Mir was the heavyweight that moved so quickly and was so skilled and had such dexterity. And now, I mean, Brock Lesnar is that plus another 40, 50 pounds. I mean, it's incredible. it's absolutely incredible. And I think the difference with Brock Lesnar of this fight, and if you look at like the prelim stuff and like all the trash talking that was going on before it, I think it was done purposely too. Those shots when he was on the ground, it used to be these very quick little hammer fists that he would do. Those were full out wind up shots that broke Mir's face.
Like cocked him back and just destroyed him.
Oh, destroyed him. And it was just, it was unreal. And so exactly, like, who's the next champion to fall? I mean, you know, for a long time, the light heavyweight was like one and done. And honestly, I mean, Machida is unbelievable. I mean, and I look at Machida kind of like how Liddell was when he was champion for a while, with these guys that have such distinct and unique styles and techniques and abilities in the cage. You can't prepare for them. You don't have someone that you can, you know, fight with and train with and spar with to get ready for these champions, because they're all so good that it's not just it's athleticism and technique, and you step into the cage and you're just not ready for it no matter what you've done. And that's what it seems to be, top to bottom. I mean, who can prepare for these guys? So it's going to be really interesting the next, you know, 1 to 3 years of all of these champions, because I just, who can prepare for them?
I mean, as long as Brock Lesnar wants to be there, I don't see anyone beating him. He's just too big.
No,
he's too big, too strong.
Absolutely right. He's too big. He's too big.
275 pounds of pure muscle.
Easy. Easy. He was 290 in that cage. There's no way he was any less. He was 290 to 300.
Like, if you think about that, for most men out there, he is like 110 or 120 more pounds of muscle than you do.
Oh, yeah. Easy. Yeah, he's an animal. But not even that. Again, muscle and power won't necessarily, you know, the UFC was built on smaller guys beating up bigger guys, especially in the beginnings, in the very, you know, earliest years of MMA. But at this point, you know, Lesnar is that power, but he's pretty skilled. Mm-hmm. And when you look at his, you know, improvements fight to fight, it's unreal. The learning curve on this guy is unreal. I mean, he's so much improved that he defeated his only loss, and he did it, I mean, just, there was nothing. I mean, there was nothing Mir could do. Mir had 3 shots in that whole fight, and it did nothing to him. So, absolutely incredible.
Okay, let's talk about something else.
All right.
Let's see, what else is going on? Art, you just want to do the show.
We could just do the show, but Kevin, you did have some yoga this week.
That's part of the show. That's fitness related.
It's fitness related?
Yeah.
It's not off topic?
No, it's... unless you're calling the yoga people out and saying that is not exercise.
Well, I would never do that.
Well, don't.
Okay.
All right. All right, that's it. Thanks for talking to the UFC chat, and
yeah. So I guess anyone that didn't see it, that still wants to see it, actually couldn't listen to anything.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. It happened.
All right. We'll be right back. Or I guess you already listened to the show. Hope it went well. Shut up, John. Or I'll de-Skype you.
Fail. Fail.
Fail.
Fail.
Yeah, watch out for that railing, dude.
Good night, Phil.